Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the program, with Wall Street in crisis over the failure of leading financial institutions, a big bailout yesterday by the federal government, more than $80 billion for AIG Insurance. We're going to hear how each of the two major party presidential candidates proposes to help our troubled economy. At the half-hour mark, we'll hear from the representative of the Barack Obama campaign. But this half-hour, speaking for the John McCain campaign, we welcome Kenyon College professor of economics, Will Melick. Will, good to have you here this half-hour.
Thanks, Fred. Nice to be here.
And we're at 614-292-8513 or email openline to wosu.org if you have questions this half hour about how John McCain, if he were elected to be president, would handle some of the difficulties in our American economy. We ask you callers to be brief so we can get to as many of you as possible. Well, Will, Senator McCain said we're in crisis. He talked about the excess, the greed, and the corruption of Wall Street, he says, have caused us to have a situation that's going to affect every American. We're in total crisis, he said. So with these kinds of failures of Lehman and the near failure AIG and Merrill Lynch having to be bought up, what does Senator McCain propose to do about this ongoing situation? Does he suggest additional regulation?
Well, the situation is pretty complicated. We're in a crisis, and it's a somewhat complicated crisis as well. So I don't think there's a potentially simplistic answer in terms of either more regulation, less regulation. It's the devil in any regulation, of course, is in the details. And so any plan needs to be pretty well thought out. My impression so far is that neither candidate is willing at this stage to put forth a very detailed plan because there's going to have to be a period of assessment, basically. Mm-hmm. The current crisis, in some respects, is a bit similar to what we saw in 1991 with the savings and loan crisis. In terms of both crises were related to bad bets on real estate.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens that it's a different cast of characters that are doing the betting. It used to be savings and loans, and now it's larger entities such as investment banks and insurance companies. The good news is those are not, by and large, deposit-taking institutions. So, people aren't as needn't be as concerned about the viability of their
sure.
deposits at a bank or savings and loan because those have not been the affected institutions.
So Senator McCain would propose an assessment of the situation and then appropriate regulation?
Yeah. He's called for a commission. That call's been, Obama's, derided that and said, well, this isn't 9/11. We don't need another commission. I don't think it matters whether you call it a commission or not. You need some careful and thoughtful analysis of what's going on. The idea that it can all be blamed either on not enough regulation or too much regulation, I think, is misguided. It's sort of interesting in the current crisis that very few hedge funds have experienced difficulties, and those are the completely unregulated financial institutions. The idea being that it's only the wealthy that are investing in hedge funds because there's minimum amounts that are required, and those people should be financially savvy enough to take care of themselves. And there's been a few hedge fund blow-ups, Amaranth in particular, but they have not been, systemic problems.
Sure.
Whereas some of the institutions that have failed, like Fannie and Freddie, are the most heavily regulated. So I don't think you can just, reach a snap judgment, it's this problem of not enough regulation or that problem of too much regulation.
Mm-hmm. I understand. On the consumer end, in terms of mortgages, well, Senator McCain has said he wants better consumer protections in terms of the person here who's signing a contract to get a mortgage for their house. And he's even talked about simplified one-page mortgages. Can you tell me a little about what Senator McCain wants to do for the mortgage consumer?
Well, I think Senator McCain wants to make things as transparent as possible. And in the current environment, sometimes things aren't as transparent as they might be. In particular, when you go to, I don't know, if you're a homeowner, when you went to close on your house, you know, you probably spent a fair amount of time signing papers that you weren't precisely sure what you were agreeing to and what fees you were paying to, you know, obtain your mortgage. It's a little bit difficult to shop around for a mortgage, although less so than in the past, thanks to the internet. But still, a standardized contract would go a long way in aiding transparency. I think it'd be better if that standardized contract was voluntary in the sense that you know you could work with the lenders to come up with a nice, simple, clear description of exactly what's involved in any mortgage agreement that you enter.
We're speaking with Will Melick. He's Kenyon College Professor of Economics here in Ohio. He's speaking for the John McCain campaign. We're talking about the economy. We'll have a representative of the Barack Obama campaign on shortly after the half-hour mark. David is with us on the phone. Hi, David.
Hey.
Go ahead.
I have more of, I guess I'm more of a global question, and that is, in light of the global economy and all that means, how much do you really think the president can affect things of this nature? And I'll hang up and listen.
When you say things of this nature, you mean which specifically, David?
Well, I specifically how energy, you know, the whole energy crisis, how that's affecting our economy specifically. We seem to have very little control over that. And I guess I just have a general question as to, you know, aside from the bully pulpit, what can the president realistically do to affect the macroeconomic situation that we seem to be in?
Okay.
That, in my opinion, seems to be a monster that's really beyond anybody's control and just kind of goes the direction that it seems to want to go.
Okay. Thanks for your question, David. Will Melick, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a very good and thoughtful question because I think oftentimes, especially in election season, people tend to attribute way too much power to a single person, even in an office as prestigious as the presidency of the United States. The U.S. economy itself is an enormous, sprawling, complicated creature, if you will. Not even to then think about how it interacts with the rest of the world as well. So the notion that a president can, for example, create jobs and all the presidential candidates will talk about, oh, this many jobs were created, you know, when so-and-so was power, and this many jobs were created or destroyed when somebody else was in power, as if the president was responsible for that creation or destruction, is a little bit crazy. Clearly, I think where the president does have some power is in setting longer-term agendas and issues that need to be addressed. For example, a president can be a real leader in terms of working with the members of Congress to make, to address those issues that we know are those areas that we know are not working correctly. For example, Social Security, health care. But that influence is mostly in setting the agenda. And any changes that they're able to accomplish with the help of Congress are, you're not going to see immediate impact. It's going to take quite some time.
Yeah. You mentioned, you mentioned Social Security. Senator McCain says he will propose supplementing Social Security with private accounts. That is to say, it's known as partial privatization in the press, at least. When President Bush attempted that, it didn't turn out to be very popular. Why would Senator McCain propose the same thing?
Well, oftentimes a good idea takes a while to gain any traction, and so you could say, oh, you're just tilting against a windmill, but in this case, I think the idea is a sound idea. I think you want people to be more personally involved, so to speak, in their retirement planning and more conscious about the retirement planning, and I think movement towards private accounts can help accomplish that. So, it took many years, for example, to deregulate the trucking industry. Just because it failed one time doesn't mean that you shouldn't continue to try to do that in successive administrations.
Mm-hmm. How would Senator Reid, we have an annual budget deficit, obviously, and also a growing national debt. So how would Senator McCain propose to pare down the national debt and eliminate the annual budget deficit?
Well, of course, you've got to have action on both sides that determine the deficit and therefore the debt. So you've got to have do something on the revenue side, and you've got to do something on the spending side. The quickest and easiest, the quickest and best way to handle a budget deficit is to get the economy moving again. That will increase revenues. The objective is not to increase revenues. The objective is to keep the economy growing and moving. A byproduct of that will be an increase in revenues. That will go a long way in helping to eliminate a deficit. And then you have to have control on the spending side as well.
How does Senator McCain propose to get the economy moving again?
Well, he wants to reduce corporate taxes, and he also wants to reduce individual income taxes as well. And I'd like to, sort of clarify an important point. The criticism is that, Senator McCain only wants to reduce taxes for the wealthy. Well, 75% of the top 1% of income tax filers are in fact small businesses, partnerships, sole proprietorships. Those all file as individuals in order to avoid the second highest corporate tax rate in the world, which is what the United States has. So we're punishing the very people who are creating the bulk of the jobs. I mean, even in this downturn, small businesses are still creating jobs. And so you want incentives in place for that to continue and to extend the creation of those jobs. So that's why changes in the tax code are important, because that's who you want to target, the people that are actually creating the jobs. That's enough to get back to the caller's question. That's another area where the president can have some impact. They can work with Congress. They can change those tax rates. That changes people's incentives and people's behavior. That gets the economy moving again. But that's a long, that's happening over the long term.
Mm-hmm. So Senator McCain proposes lowering the corporate tax rate.
Yes.
And also, as you say, extending all the Bush income tax credits, which he had first opposed, these Bush income tax credits, which Democrats charge are for the wealthiest Americans. And Senator McCain has reversed his position on that and says, no, now I want to extend them. Why do you think he originally opposed and now reverses?
Well, I think he's come to realize that in fact, the wealthy are not just, I think people have in the back of their mind, oh, this is the heirs to the Rockefeller. That's who we're cutting taxes for. No, we're cutting taxes for somebody that's opened up a small business and has been very successful, and we want to encourage them to continue to be successful. I think he's come to that realization, partly because he's getting good economic advice. Doug Holtzeek and his main economic advisor is a well-regarded tax expert.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with both campaigns for the major party presidential candidates this hour in succession, speaking this half hour for the John McCain presidential campaign. Kenyon College professor of economics, Will Mielek, is with us. And obviously, we're talking about the American economy. Questions, comments, 614-292-8513. And you can email a brief comment or question to openline@wosu.org. Diane is next on the phone. Hello, Diane.
Hi there. I'm just a layman, okay? I've got arithmetic behind me and a little bit of algebra, so I don't know too much about numbers. But I do follow the news, and I don't understand how the economy is going to somehow be jump-started or stimulated by giving even more tax breaks or continuing tax breaks for corporations in the upper percentile income-earning individuals when I don't understand how that's going to do too much of anything, because it hasn't done too much of anything in the last 8 years. Or if it had, if this trickle-down effect was going to have an effect in terms of creating jobs, and if businesses have more money, expendable money to put into whatever, creating jobs. But it hasn't happened. So how is this philosophy going to help in the next 4 years as the king is proposing? And then eliminating the income tax, where is the revenue supposed to come from that's going to help whittle down the deficit? If we're not going to be taxing people's income, I just don't get it.
Well, nobody's talking about eliminating the income tax now. Our caller saying, look, these policies have not worked in the last 8 years. Why should they? Almost 8 years. Why should they work now?
Yeah, I just to clarify, I don't think either candidate's talking about eliminating the income tax.
No.
In fact, the policies have worked because in the past 8 years, because that's where we've seen the largest growth in employment is coming from small businesses. And that's who's been directly benefited from the Bush tax cuts that we've been referring to. Now that's even with the Bush tax cuts, you still have the top 1% is paying 40% of federal income tax. So it's not as if we've exempted the top 1% from paying income tax. But, 1% of the filers are paying 40% of the revenues. That's where we would see it coming. It's where we've seen job destruction, if you will, is in kind of more established large industrial enterprises. And we think the reduction in the corporate tax would benefit them.
Diane, one follow-up? Go ahead.
Yeah, just a follow-up. Well, that doesn't in terms of jobs being lost, of course, we all know there's a huge amount of them that are going overseas.
Well, it's not that big.
Let me finish my follow-up, please. And the fact of the matter is the unemployment rate is now over 6% nationally. Regardless of who or who is not creating jobs, the unemployment rate is getting dangerously high yet again. My husband just lost his job after 18 years with the same company. He's 58 years old. And he just lost his job after 18 years through no fault of his own, because a lot of businesses, large businesses, are cutting a lot of their overhead at the top.
Right. So the idea is
there went our health benefits. There
understand.
Went,
understand. But Will, your response?
Yeah, if I could just respond. I mean, so you say the firm's costs are increasing and they're having to shed workers, and that's terrible loss for anybody when they lose their job. So wouldn't the most reasonable policy then do something to cut those firms' costs to allow them to expand and hire workers?
And
that's why we're cutting we would propose to cut the corporate tax rate.
Okay, Diane, must move on. Thank you. Call us, please be concise and brief so we can get to as many of you as we can before we close. Dave, hello, Dave.
Yes.
Go.
Thank you. I'll try and be a little nicer than the previous caller. But I was wondering if and when the McCain campaign is going to talk more about the drilling offshore here or oil exploration in the United States, and if his economic advisors feel that this is part of what is deterring our economy. I mean, when you're spending, I know I own a small business and I travel a lot, and I'm spending $150 a week on gasoline, and we've obviously not able to spend that money someplace else to generate in the economy. I know the House just passed a bill. I guess I'm not asking my question very well, but the House just passed a bill that is going to allow drilling 50 miles offshore or something. But they're neglecting to mention that if they don't do something soon, the ban is going to completely expire at the end of the month. So they're trying to slip something under the rug, it seems. Do you agree, or is there any movement in the campaign that direction?
Let us ask, what is John McCain's policy in terms of offshore drilling?
Yeah, John McCain's put forth a really quite comprehensive Lexington project that addresses energy, his views on energy policy. his view, which I think is the correct view, is it's going to take a number of initiatives in order to get the energy prices back down to a better level, including but not limited to offshore drilling. He is definitely in favor of offshore drilling. He's also in favor of expanding other energy sources as well, including renewables. But he's a realist enough to know that it cannot just be renewables, because there simply isn't, it's just not feasible that renewables, which, you know, currently are just a very few percentage points of our total energy production, can take up all that slack. So it's going to have to be comprehensive. Hmm. Offshore drilling is definitely part of the plan. It's silly to have those resources sit there and not put them to use.
Senator Burkina, I understand he opposes drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, although his running mate, Governor Sarah Palin of Alaska, has in the past supported that.
Yeah, I don't know how thinking going forward might evolve. I mean, you know, the footprint they're talking about in the ANWR is about the size of Dulles Airport. So we've seen other countries successfully drill in very hostile environments and do so very safely. You know, Norway immediately comes to mind. It's hard to find a worse place to drill for oil than the North Sea, and yet they have a very clean environmental record.
In that case, why does Senator McCain oppose it?
I'm not sure. I don't know enough about his position in particular on ANWR to answer that question.
We have an email. Will, we have an email from Lori. What about all the jobs being shipped overseas? How does that help our economy? I think there should be incentives for companies that keep jobs in the USA. So how will Senator McCain, will he give incentives to keep jobs here in the USA? How is he going to handle that situation?
Yeah, well, he intends to make sure that there aren't any tax advantages sending jobs overseas. But, you know, I think, you know, John McCain from the beginning has been very much an advocate of free trade, because he realizes that free trade's critical for a dynamic, growing economy. And here again is an issue where there might be some short-term costs, but those are clearly outweighed by long-term benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to trade with the rest of the world so we can be as productive as possible. For example, you might remember 20 or 30 years ago that people were wringing their hands because textile factories in South Carolina were closing because we had opened up trade in garments and apparel and textiles with the rest of the world. That is actually, in the short term, that's very painful for the workers that have been dislocated. Consumers benefit because they get cheaper access to less expensive goods. It's very painful for the person that loses his job in the factory. But if you're looking over a 20 or 30-year period, do you really want your workers working in a textile plant where they're never going to earn that much because they're not all that productive, as opposed to working in a much more higher value-added position where they can be more productive and make more? And again, that's a balancing of some short-term pain for some big long-term benefits.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left. Does Senator McCain propose additional federal funding for local and state job training efforts in view of this displacement?
Yes. That's the standard response, is to say, look, the gains from free trade offset the losses, but those losses for a lot of individuals are very real. And so you need to do something for the 58-year-old whose job has been displaced, who you can't, practically you can't imagine them being able to, you know, immediately turn into a computer programmer or whatever. So you do need training for those displacements. But if you shut down trade altogether, then the child of that 58-year-old is not going to have the opportunities that they should have.
Mm-hmm. Well, Will, we've got about 1 minute before we have to close. Would you like to make a summary statement in terms of McCain campaign economic policy?
Well, I think the McCain campaign offers the best mix of forward-looking, dynamic possibilities for the United States economy, as opposed to sort of a backward-looking protectionist approach to solving the problems of the U.S. economy. And that's why I, you know, count myself as a supporter of McCain's economic policy.
All right. We've been speaking with Kenyon College Professor of Economics Will Mielek, again speaking for the John McCain campaign. Just after we take a break here, we're going to hear from a representative for the Barack Obama presidential campaign. It will be Jason Furman. He's economic policy advisor to – or director, I should say, for the campaign. Will, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Fred.
After these messages, we'll be back and call us if you have a question for Senator Obama. Hold on the line or give us a call. Email to openline at WOSU.org on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Next time on Day to Day, trouble is brewing at some Seattle coffee shops.
Hi there, what can I get for you today?
Some residents complain that bikini-clad baristas are stimulating customers with more than a cup of joe.
Come on, there's age limits for what are considered adult things.
Will it be back to G-rated grandes?
It's just supposed to be fun, and everybody likes being flirted with.
You're the cream in my coffee.
Next time on Day to Day.
You will always be.
Day to Day begins in 30 minutes. It starts at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. You can listen to Open Line with Fred Anderle where you want and when you want with the Open Line podcast. Search Open Line at the iTunes Music Store to download each program to your iPod or MP3 device. And for more than two decades, NPR's Morning Edition has prepared listeners for the day ahead, with up-to-the-minute news, background analysis, commentary, and coverage of arts and sports. Get your morning update from one of the most respected news magazines in the world, with Steve Inskeep, Renee Montaigne, and WOSU's Marilyn Smith. Every weekday morning from 5 to 9 a.m. Now on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News and Classical Music. And in the weather forecast for today, sunny skies and a high of 75, mostly clear tonight with a low of 52. For Thursday, sunny and a high of 75, and a beautiful day on Friday, sunny with a high of 75. Currently, it's 70 degrees in downtown Columbus.
After February 17, 2009, all full-power television stations will broadcast only in digital. If you're one of the thousands of people in Central Ohio who uses rabbit ears or a rooftop antenna with your analog TV, you're going to need to take action to continue watching TV. Learn more about what you'll need to do to make the switch, as well as ways you can help others, at wosu.org/dtv or call 292-9678.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. We're hearing about the major party presidential candidates' plans to help a troubled American economy. Last segment, we heard from Will Mielek, Kenyon College economics professor, speaking for the John McCain campaign. Now we're speaking for the Barack Obama presidential campaign. Joining us by phone, Jason Furman is economic policy director for the Obama campaign. Jason Furman, welcome to Open Line.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we're at 614-292-8513. You can email a brief comment or question to openline at WOSU.org. Jason, we've seen the bailout of AIG insurance. We've seen the failure of Lehman Brothers, et cetera. What does Senator Obama propose to do about these repeated difficulties? I know it's complex, but what does he have in mind?
Right. Well, first of all, you can't even start to repair the problems without understanding what caused them in the first place. And we have had 8 straight years of a systematic dismantling of protections for consumers, which helped cause the explosion of subprime loans, of oversight of our financial institutions. You know, Fannie and Freddie were given a clean bill of health just a week or two before they were taken over by the government. And finally, after the crisis finally hit, starting last summer, an administration that has consistently had ideological blinkers and been too little and too late. So that entire thrust of economic policy over the last 8 years is what put us in this incredibly unfortunate position. Now, if you step into the shoes of the Federal Reserve last night rather than 8 years ago, you have a very limited set of options, and none of them are particularly good. This is what they felt they needed to do to prevent this insurance company from going down with really serious ramifications for the economy as a whole and for job growth. But what we really need to do is get back to some more common sense rules of the road for our financial markets and protect our consumers.
Mm-hmm. Senator McCain has proposed a commission to take a look at the situation and evaluate it. Now, Senator Obama has essentially criticized that. But isn't that a reasonable step to do, set up a commission or some kind of body to look at this very complex situation before you begin re-regulating?
You do commissions for two reasons. Number one, if you don't know the answer to a question and you need to figure it out, or number two, everyone knows the answer, but it's too politically difficult to admit it in public, so you need the cover of a commission. Neither of those two conditions are true here. You know, I just, at the beginning top of your show, gave you a quick thumbnail sketch of what went wrong. We know what happened. We know what the problems were. It's that we stopped protecting consumers from these subprime loans. We stopped looking at the books of these financial institutions. And we know how to fix it. And Barack Obama isn't shy to say we need to modernize our financial regulations. We need more capital and margin requirements. Now, sure, there's a lot of details that still need to be worked out. But that's something that a President Obama's Treasury could work out together with members of Congress from both parties. You don't need a commission here.
Now, Senator Obama has proposed ending President Bush's income tax cuts for households with income above $250,000. Is that right?
Correct.
And would that, on the other hand, penalize, and our Kenyon College economics professor suggested that would penalize a number of small businesses who file as individuals in order to avoid a high corporate tax rate. So would we be penalizing small business?
Right. I mean, let's just understand why you hear that really deeply misleading argument, one that, for example, independent organizations like factcheck.org have said was highly misleading. The reason is that it's very hard to defend why the top one-tenth of 1% of Americans should get an additional $577,000 a year in new tax cuts under the McCain plan above and beyond the hundreds of thousands of dollars of tax cuts they've already gotten. Their families making an average of making over $2.8 million a year. They just don't need a $1 million tax cut. Now, because it's impossible for the McCain campaign to talk, in a straightforward way and say, somebody making $2.8 million a year, sure, they need another million. Because they can't say that, resort to this comment about small businesses. It's just not true. You look at small businesses in this country, they get tax cuts from the Obama plan. For example, health insurance, 50% tax credit on the premiums paid by small businesses. That's one of the biggest impediments to job growth and wage growth for our businesses in this country. Number two, if you have a small business that's successful, zero capital gains on that small business when you sell it. Also, a payroll tax credit exemption for the first $8,100 you earn for small business owners, for their employees. That's Barack Obama's agenda for small business. And John McCain's being disingenuous because, frankly, he found enough room in his budget to propose $200 billion a year of tax cuts for corporations. ExxonMobil alone gets $1.2 billion every year. And John McCain didn't put in his budget a single tax cut for small businesses, not one. So if you wanted to have a debate about small business and tax policy, that's certainly one that Barack Obama would welcome.
Senator Obama proposes, I understand, does he propose to entirely eliminate taxes on seniors making less than $50,000?
Yes, he does.
Entirely eliminate. So how do you define senior?
Oh, this would be above 65.
So anybody above 65 years old who's working and making less than $50,000 a year will have no taxes to pay?
No
federal taxes.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And this is in part an effort to simplify, actually. The way we tax Social Security benefits right now is very complicated. And this will just make it a lot easier. If you make less than $50,000, you won't even need to fill out that whole partial taxation of Social Security benefit form, and you won't have to pay taxes.
How much will this cost the Treasury?
That is, I believe it's about $5 billion a year. It's on the order of that, mm-hmm. Which is, again, I mean, just to compare it about what John McCain is giving to the oil companies in tax cuts every year.
If Jason Furman is economic policy director for the Barack Obama presidential campaign, we're at 614-292-8513. If you'd like to ask a question, our first caller here is Vaughn. Hello, Vaughn. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I would like to see more emphasis upon the tax reduction and what that means in terms of jobs for low-income people. We hear very little about the multiplier effect of tax cuts in those areas where the people spend the money that they receive. And the other thing I'd like for you to talk about is the tax stimulus that or not tax stimulus, but the economic stimulus that Obama has proposed. We've just now, we're totaling almost $1 trillion in bailout for Wall Street without being, you know, that's protection, that is to prevent disaster. But it's not going to create jobs. Tax stimulus where you would give money to low-income people, that money is spent, and the multiplier is spent. Businesses receive the money. They pay taxes, et cetera.
All right.
We hear very little of that today.
All right. Let's, Jason Furman, tell us more.
Sure. Your caller makes a good point, which is Barack Obama's tax agenda is part of an overall pro-growth agenda. We have several big problems in our economy, but some of the biggest are that we've lost 605,000 jobs in so far this year, a lot of those jobs lost in Ohio. The typical working-age family has seen its income go down by more than $2,000 since the year 2000. College, child care, all those are going through the roof. So what Barack Obama has proposed, you can essentially think of it in two parts. Number one is putting a lot of money into the economy up front to help create jobs and relieve the strain on families. And that includes spending to rebuild our roads and schools, to provide state fiscal relief so that states don't need to cut their budgets, and to put $1,000 in the pockets of families paid for by taking back just a portion of the excessive profits of oil companies. That would help really jumpstart the economy, create jobs directly, put money in the pockets of families who can go out and spend it. Then over the long run, what Barack Obama's proposed is a tax cut for 95% of all Americans who draw a paycheck. Typical couple would get $1,000. In addition, there's other tax cuts that would help you pay for college, save for retirement, afford child care, pay your mortgage interest, and in general, designed in a manner that really helps some of the things that are really critical to America's growth, like work, savings, home ownership, going to college. All of those are what we need for America to grow, and we need to start rewarding ordinary families rather than the wealthiest.
Jason, you say that Senator Obama would have tax cuts for 95% of American families earning income. You say a typical family, $1,000 tax cut. What would be that typical family? And would that cut be phased in, or would it be immediate in the first year?
It would be immediate in the first year. It's basically for any worker in a married couple making up to $150,000, if both spouses work, they would get a $1,000 tax cut.
We're talking about a household income of $150,000?
Yep, up to $150,000. After $150,000, starts phasing out.
Let's say you had, maybe in Franklin County here, the median household income might be, what, $50,000. How much of a tax cut would such a household get?
Well, you'd be eligible for that tax cut, but also some others. You know, if you're sending a child to college, if you're paying for child care, if you're trying to save for retirement, for any of those. But the basic tax cut is flat. It's just a flat $500 per worker. It just phases out as you get to higher incomes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Back to our telephone callers. David is on the line. Hello, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have actually two questions. My first question is,
Where is, I hear all of these tax cuts and the money, the $150 billion that Senator Obama proposes to put into new jobs and job creation, green jobs that won't go away, the tax cuts that are going to go out to all the working families. With our current deficit, where is the money going to come from to do this?
That's a very good question, and it's also illustrative of the difference, really, between Barack Obama and John McCain. Both Barack Obama and John McCain are proposing tax cuts. The two big differences are, number one, John McCain's tax cuts go almost entirely to corporations and the wealthy. In fact, 101 million middle-class families would not get a penny in direct tax relief from John McCain's plan. That's about 70% of all households would get nothing from him. And number two, John McCain isn't paying for his tax cuts, so they add to the deficit. Barack Obama could not deliver the tax cuts he's proposing unless he was willing to make some really tough choices about how he was going to pay for it. Because you're right, America cannot afford those tax cuts unless we find a way to pay for them. So number one, that involves taking away the tax cuts that families making over $250,000 a year have gotten from President Bush. We just can't afford those when families are struggling. That means closing down international tax havens. That means getting rid of a tax subsidy we have right now, where basically an American company investing overseas doesn't need to pay taxes until they bring their profits back to the United States. And if they reinvest overseas, they never have to pay taxes. Barack Obama would end that. And a whole range of other steps. You also have to be tough on the spending side, whether that's responsibly ending the war in Iraq, taking on the special interests that oversubsidize HMOs in Medicare, or getting rid of the earmarks that have exploded under a Republican Congress, and that, you know, Governor Palin, for example, has really championed in the state of Alaska.
David, follow-up question?
Yes. Well, I just recently saw an ad. I don't know if it's true, but it said you had mentioned the earmarks with the Republicans, that Barack Obama has asked for more earmarks in his time there than anyone. But my second question was—
That's not true.
Is it true that, or is there any truth to the story that is out there, that the reason that Barack Obama does not want the any type of criminal investigation into Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, is it because that some of those people who receive the big bonuses are actually working in his economic campaign? Is that true or not?
That's—
and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, David.
I haven't heard of anyone initiating a criminal investigation. I haven't heard Barack Obama comment on that. But why don't we talk about that CEO pay on Fannie and Freddie? And by the way, the chief lobbyist for Fannie and Freddie, the head of the Homeowners Alliance, is now the manager of the McCain campaign. So that campaign is extraordinarily tied to the lobbyists for Fannie and Freddie. But what Barack Obama has consistently said is, we do need to aid homeowners, but we can't bail out the shareholders, the management, or the CEOs of these two companies. Last week, it was reported that under the government arrangement, the CEOs of the two companies were going to get about $10 million each. Barack Obama was outraged. He wrote a letter to both Secretary Paulson and Director Lockhart saying, we cannot be putting taxpayer money into these companies while their CEOs are getting a $10 million bonus. It became a big news story, and partly as a result of that, the administration stepped in and said they actually changed their mind and they were going to cancel the bonuses for these two investigations. That's something that Barack Obama pushed for. No bonuses for CEOs when you have run your company into the ground and the government is essentially taking it over. Where was John McCain last week? Wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal praising the deal, saying he loved it, not raising any concerns at all about their CEOs and their outsized pay.
Jason, anybody with Fannie and Freddie connections working for the Obama campaign?
Certainly our campaign manager was not the top lobbyist for Fannie and Freddie. There's a lot of people in Washington that have connections to Fannie and Freddie, and there's a lot of blame on both sides of the aisle for what's happened. The McCain campaign's connections are much deeper, first of all. But second of all, just look at what Barack Obama said in his speech yesterday, talked about ending Fannie and Freddie as we know them. This is not somebody who wants to return to the status quo. He wants a major reform in which we don't have the situation where shareholders are benefiting at the expense of the public.
You seem to be saying that some Obama personnel, campaign personnel, do have connections with Fannie and Freddie.
No senior Obama campaign staff, to my knowledge.
Our caller had a question about Senator Obama asking for earmarks, and we understand he, at least according to one report, that over time he has asked for hundreds of millions of dollars in earmarks. Is that right?
Virtually every member of Congress asks for important things like really important hospitals and bridges for their areas. But he's also passed one of the significant pieces of legislation that Barack Obama passed was to bring transparency to government to create an online database where citizens can take a look and evaluate all those projects, know who sponsored them, understand what they are, the most comprehensive ethics reform in more than 25 years in Washington, and has co-sponsored a bill that would eliminate earmarks entirely.
Mm-hmm. Senator McCain, of course, famously has said he will veto any earmarks if he were president that came across his desk. Does Senator Obama make the same promise?
What Senator Obama would do is submit a budget in which everything was fully paid for and a budget that was completely transparent to the public so people could evaluate. But you know, look, I mean, a lot of the aid we give to Israel right now is an earmark. I'm not sure that John McCain would actually veto that. And it's also a little bit of a distraction. We have about $19 billion a year of earmarks. John McCain is proposing $300 billion a year of tax cuts. His earmark plan would pay for less than 6% of the tax cuts that he's proposing.
But essentially, Senator Obama does not make that same promise that he would veto any earmarks that came before him as president.
Senator Obama has made a much stronger promise than what John McCain has made, which is that every single thing he does, he'll pay for and will subject it all to the scrutiny of the light of day. But let's not get distracted by, you know, if aid to Israel is an earmark, Barack Obama will not veto aid to Israel.
Jason Furman, Economic Policy Director for the Barack Obama Campaign, talking about our economy, 614-292-8513. A call is Be Concise. We'll get to you. Cindy's here. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I'm going to quote from the New York Times very briefly. Barack Obama was second only to Senate Banking Committee Chairman Chris Dodd, the Connecticut Democrat, in contributions from Fannie and Freddie and PACs since 1998. Even though Mr. Obama has been in the Senate only since 2005, I don't find that that is particularly good business for our country. While the two firms have been careful to hire from and contribute to both parties, generally Fannie Mae has favored Democrats and Freddie Mac Republicans. Barack Obama said he received $122,850. Of which 101,000 was from Fannie Mae. I think your argument about Fannie and Freddie and Barack Obama is at best specious.
Jason Furman, your response.
Sure. It's simple. Barack Obama has raised more money than anyone in the history of politics. What he has raised from Fannie and Freddie is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what he's raised overall. And he hasn't taken money from their PACs. He hasn't taken money from their lobbyists. That's a big difference. John McCain does take money from PACs and lobbyists. Barack Obama won't. And then, most importantly, Barack Obama doesn't take their advice. He has been consistently critical of their business model, talking about reforming them, talking about ending the mandate they face. And he can do that because he's not guided by money, because the majority of his money comes from small donors over the internet and people who happen to be employees of Fannie Mae and want to give their contributions because they're inspired by Barack Obama represent a tiny fraction of what he raises overall from his vast online donation.
Our next caller is Joe. Hi, Joe.
Hi. One of the things that concerns me, two things, I'll be real quick. When you talk about not bailing out shareholders, and in several of your comments, you in my opinion, as an investor and a family man, kind of throw shareholders in with this really ugly tone of voice with these evil corporate CEOs and these evil corporations. Shareholders are every citizen of the Columbus here in Central Ohio. We all are invested today. We're not in corporate pensions like in the 50s and 60s. Our 401ks, we are shareholders. So when you say, with some hostility seemingly, that Barack Obama is not going to bail out the shareholders, then you're saying you're not going to look after the teachers and the firemen and the policemen and the salesmen and the people working at Kroger's and at Anthony Thomas and at anywhere else, because we are all shareholders. When these companies go under and the attitude is too bad for the shareholders, that's the retirement plans, the 401k okay. plans, the 401b plans for all of us.
Okay, Joe, understand. Yeah, Jason, your response.
Yeah, I think your caller raises a very legitimate point. And let me just explain a little bit better. You have a choice between taking, let's say, $10 billion of taxpayer money and handing it to the owners of these companies. That means every one of us in this country, all the people your caller was talking about, would basically have to pay higher taxes in order for this to happen. That's not the right way for people to prosper. What we do need, though, is to protect shareholders, absolutely. And the front line of that protection is the Securities and Exchange Commission, which needs to blow the whistle on companies when they're undertaking reckless and risky actions that are running their companies into the ground, destroying their value for shareholders. And one problem we've had in recent years is the SEC has been dramatically cut under the Bush administration, its enforcement greatly diminished, and that's why Barack Obama has gotten the endorsement of three of the leading past chairmen of the Securities and Exchange Commission, including Bill Donaldson, who's a lifelong Republican who was appointed by the current President Bush. He said, we need to look after shareholders. I mean, that's been the whole problem with the economic strategy of the last 8 years. It's been really short-sighted. Lobbyists, let's say, let's do what's best for our bank, let's do our best for our industry over the next year. Turns out at the end of the day, it's really bad for investors, for pension funds, and for everyone. That's why Barack Obama wants to restore the type of sound economic policy that would, you know, help both our economy and our stock market, and also help more families save and invest so they can participate and share in that wealth.
Okay. Jason, we have just about a minute or so left. Maybe you'd like to take this time to summarize Senator Obama's economic policies and wrap them up for us.
Sure. Barack Obama believes that the economy has done badly over the last 8 years. It's doing even worse lately as we're hemorrhaging jobs. And that means we need a change in our economic strategy. We can't do tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations and hope that that creates jobs and rising incomes for the middle class. It just hasn't worked. So what we do need to do instead is cut taxes for ordinary families. We need to invest in making America energy independent of Middle East oil. We need a new health plan that gives affordable, accessible health care to all Americans. And finally, we need to pay for all of that by making the tough choices to be fiscally responsible, reining in wasteful spending, and taking back, for example, some of the tax breaks for companies that send jobs overseas.
Jason Furman for the Barack Obama presidential campaign. Previously, we heard from Will Mielek for the John McCain campaign. Jason Furman, thanks for being with us this past half hour.
Okay.
News is next on listener-supported WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.